You're listening to New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC with your host, Dirk Norris.
New Mexico Filmworks is a program of the New Mexico State Film Office brought to you by the generosity of Hutton Broadcasting. In the third segment of the show, I'll be talking with Eric Wilson of Pivot VFX down in Albuquerque. But on the line right now, I have Ross Marks. Ross is a native of Highland Park, Illinois, and graduated from New Mexico State University with a BA in 1990. He was one of the youngest graduates of the prestigious American Film Institute directing program. And in 1995, Ross directed the full-length feature film Homage, starring Blythe Danser, Bruce Davidson, Cheryl Lee, and Frank Whaley, written and produced by Mark Medoff. The film premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, where it received an award, and went on to receive more awards in numerous film festivals. In 1997 and 98, Ross taught independent filmmaking at AFI and is currently teaching Introduction to Cinema and Screenwriting in New Mexico State University's Creative Media Institute. Welcome.
Hello, welcome.
I'm glad to have you here, and we're going to be talking about the White Sands International Film Festival. You're the artistic director for that. But before we get into that, give us a little more of your background. How did you get into, what was your interest in filmmaking?
Well, I did go to film school. I got my master's degree from the American Film Institute. Immediately after graduation, I directed a feature film, Homage, that won an award at Sundance. And then off of the strength of that feature film, I directed another film called The Twilight of the Golds, which starred Faye Dunaway and Brendan Fraser, Rosie O'Donnell, Jennifer Beals, had a big cast, mm-hmm. And was produced by Gary Marshall, who also starred in the film. And after that, I became really excited and interested in film festivals and the whole process of supporting independent film. Uh-huh. And that's what sort of led me to the White Sands Film Festival, was as a filmmaker, I saw the great love and support for independent filmmaking, and I wanted to sort of give back to other filmmakers.
I think for independent filmmakers, there is just this certain passion for it that's just so evident in everything they do.
Yeah, independent filmmaking truly is, the grassroots, ground zero of filmmaking, where you're doing it for the love of film. You just love to, as a filmmaker, you love to be behind the camera. Everyone who's involved in the film is doing it because they have a passion for it, whether it be costumes, acting, the director of photography. Everybody's doing it because they love filmmaking. They love being around the camera and creating, fascinating and interesting work.
And they have to have that passion because it's really hard work.
Very hard work. I remember when we did Homage, we had about 18, 20-hour days, 6 days a week, and people were just doing it. Sheer passion was driving you after a while. You're not doing it for the craft service.
Yeah, right. Yeah, not going for the barbecue ribs.
Right.
And when an audience sits and watches a film, I don't think any of that shows, as it should not. But I think also filmmakers watch a movie and they say, oh, man, I can't imagine what those guys were going through to get that shot and that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, it's really exciting and rewarding for a filmmaker to come up with a script, work with a writer, write it themselves, find a way to cobble together a few dollars to make it, put together the crew, the cast, and then suddenly, before you know it, it's on the screen and, you're interacting with the audience, and it's a finished piece. So it's really rewarding and exciting to go from, the beginnings of an idea, mm-hmm. And then having a finished movie.
Well, was that your interest in directing, or was there something else?
I started out as an actor,
and
I was acting. I was here at New Mexico State University in Las Cruces, and Mark Medoff was one of my professors, and he said, you're a good actor. Probably could make a living, but I think you'd be a great director. So I made a short film while I was living in Las Cruces just to see what it would be like to get behind the camera. And that film won several awards and got me into the American Film Institute.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I just continued directing and really have a have a passion for it, and especially the independent filmmaking side, which isn't driven so much by money, but is more driven by passion and vision and really, you know, more artistic, I think, than studio films.
Yeah, and it always seems to come down to the money issue and being able to. It's a hard row for the independent filmmaker.
It is. It's very difficult. There's less and less distribution opportunities today for independent filmmakers, and that's why film festivals are so important. Mm-hmm. With less distribution opportunity in the theaters, the film festival circuit has sort of replaced the independent film distributor. So now, as an independent filmmaker, whereas before there were some distributors, small distributors who would take your film from town to town, and now as a filmmaker you take your film to festival in order to find an audience.
And of course you would make a big distinction between film festivals and putting a movie up on YouTube, for the integrity and the visual experience as well.
When you're making a movie, the goal always is to put it on the big screen in front of an audience. When you're behind the camera and you're setting up a shot and you're directing a scene, you're really visualizing and envisioning, you know, the big screen, the surround sound, 200 people sitting in the theater watching it and responding to it. And that's why you make movies. YouTube and Netflix and all the smaller forms of distribution, it doesn't have the same impact on an audience. I mean, it's nice to get your film out there and have it seen and get hits on YouTube and get some of the downloads from Netflix, but it does not replace putting it on the big screen with surround sound and having an audience sitting in front of it. So it's just not the same.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you say that because people are consuming media in new ways now. And I've heard a number of people say, well, I love going to the theaters, but my son watches everything on his iPad.
When I see somebody with a smartphone watching a movie, I cringe. I absolutely cringe. You know, just the shooting ratio, when you're shooting a movie, you have the 1:85 ratio, which is sort of that wide rectangle.
Right.
But then when you're on a smartphone, it reduces the film to that little small square. And, you know, I think about when somebody's watching a movie on their smartphone, I think about all the people and how hard they work to get that big, vast, you know, wide image, and it's just ruined. You know, it doesn't have the same impact. So it's so important, I think, for filmmakers and for audiences to get to the theater and watch it, you know, the way it was meant to be watched.
Meant to be watched. So are there filmmakers that are now making their films to be consumed on smartphones?
Absolutely. Yeah. Unfortunately, typically what happens is a filmmaker makes their movie, and then they actually have to make decisions afterwards in the editing room because they know the ratio is a smaller ratio. So they actually have to cut the edges of their movie and replace it with shots that are, you know, more tailored to the smaller screen.
Yeah, and I don't know, any time there's like a new technology, there's like the old school and the new school, and there's, you know, people that jump into both camps and are devout loyalists to their particular views. There are people that say, oh, you got to do, the newest, latest, greatest. I don't think film theaters will ever go away.
No, you can't. There's no way that an iPad or a smartphone or even your big screen television can replace the movie going experience in a theater. You just can't replace it. You can't beat it.
When I was going to school at UNM, I loved going to the Lobo Theater because that was like a whole community experience with, you know, just the fun being with that crowd and watching the movie.
And that's what's great about film festivals and why we work so hard, the White Sands Film Festival. We have a huge number of filmmakers that come down to the festival and accompany their films.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to watch their film on a big screen, see the audience response, and then afterwards we do these talkbacks where the audience has an opportunity to talk to the filmmaker, ask them questions, and it's a wonderful experience, a unique experience, because you go to a movie, and how many times after the movie would you like to ask the filmmaker a question or find out, you know, why he shot something a certain way or cast a certain actor? So the nice thing about a film festival, the White Sands Film Festival in particular, is it gives an opportunity for the audience and the filmmaker to have a dialogue and learn more about the filmmaker, the film, and the whole filmmaking process. It's a really cool experience.
Yeah, I think that's a real valuable experience to be able to sit there and question the filmmakers and kind of get those insights from them.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's really interesting, fascinating. Filmmakers love it. Audiences love it. And that's one of the real attractions. People ask me all the time, well, why should I go to the film festival? And I tell them, well, it's a chance, number one, to see films you otherwise wouldn't get a chance to see because they're not getting distributed by the studios. And number two, it's a chance to meet the filmmakers and the actors and, you know, get the sort of behind-the-scenes look at good films.
Right. And Ross, we've got just a few seconds left in this segment. Do you think we could have too many film festivals?
You know what? As long as there are independent filmmakers making good movies, I think every community of any substance and population should put together a film festival because, like I said before, film festivals have become the primary form of distribution for independent films.
Right. We're going to take a break here, Ross. You're listening to Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. I'm your host, Dirk Norris, and we'll be right back with Ross Marks. And you're listening to New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. My guest is Ross Marks, Artistic Director of the White Sands International Film Festival. Welcome back.
Hi.
So let's talk about the film festival itself. It's been around, you said, for 7 years?
Yeah, this is the seventh year for the White Sands Film Festival.
And it began in Alamogordo.
Started in Alamogordo by some film lovers who wanted to bring films to an audience that they otherwise wouldn't get a chance to see because there's no real, you know, the art theaters have gone away. You know, it used to be a lot of towns had these art theaters that showed neat, interesting films by, you know, John Cassavetes and foreign filmmakers, and you know, most of those are gone now.
Right, right. And it's been in Las Cruces for the last 3 years. Have you been involved with it since it's been in Las Cruces?
This is my second year.
Second year.
2 years ago, the board of the film festival asked me if I would get involved and help them. And I said to them, I said, you know, I was a filmmaker, and as a filmmaker, I've been to Sundance three times. Sundance used to be the premier independent filmmaking venue in this country.
Right.
What's happened to Sundance is Sundance has been taken over by the studios. So instead of really cool independent films, you're getting all these big studio films. So I think there needs to be a new Sundance, a home for true independent filmmakers, and that's what my vision is for White Sands.
I've
the next Sundance.
I've heard that comment from other folks that there needs to be a new Sundance because it's just become something completely different than what it started out as. Ross, tell us what your duties are as artistic director.
My first job is to find good films, quality independent films, and create a positive viewing experience for the audience. So I set out to really comb the globe for the best independent films. I contact the filmmakers, tell them about the film festival, get them excited, get them interested in submitting their films. And then we pare it down to the best of the best. We try to find the very best independent films to create a great, you know, experience for our audiences.
Do you have do you try to have a particular theme each year, or is it just kind of what's out there currently?
Well, you know, we try to find films that are, you know, feature New Mexico whenever possible. Films that are shot here, we really try to support local film. filmmakers and throughout the state. So we've got a couple of good ones this year. We really were able to broaden our search and have quite a few international films, some really great films from around the globe. And the other element of, that we do here as part of the film festival, we have a Lifetime Achievement Award that we give. Last year we gave it to Val Kilmer, who came down to the festival. This year, Jeffrey Tambor, who's done 175 feature films, is going to get the award. We do workshops. Jeffrey Tambor is going to do an acting workshop at the film festival.
Wonderful.
Mark Medoff does a screenwriting workshop. We're going to do a workshop for independent filmmaking with several of the filmmakers who are in attendance. So it's a sort of an educational outreach. It's a film festival showing great independent films. And then there's the award, which, like I said, this year is Jeffrey Tambor, which, sort of gives back to people in the film industry that have a body of work, and we try to honor them.
When you're searching internationally, do you have to go through the big, long explanation of, yes, New Mexico is part of the United States, and White Sands is this place and that place? And
Right, absolutely. No, we're this is my second year. The film festival started out as a very sort of local entity, and I'm trying to make it a viable international venue for independent filmmakers from around the globe. So, in the early stages of the formation of our festival, we're really out there selling filmmakers on, there's so many film festivals now. So
right.
The first question they ask is, well, why should I submit to your film festival? And I tell them, of course, that we're the next Sundance. We've got amazing screening facilities, super audiences. It's a chance to come down and interact with other filmmakers. And we're really getting the word out. As a matter of fact, I'm most excited. Last year, we had we give awards at the film festival. We give an audience award where the audience votes on the best film. We have a jury of judges that votes on the best feature, best documentary, best director. And last year, our audience award, a film called Strings, won an award here. And then because of the award and because of the screening at White Sands, they got a distributor.
Oh, terrific.
The best feature film we had last year, which is voted A Girlfriend. And again, because of the award and the credibility of our festival, they also got a distributor. And those are the type of things that really made Sundance, where an independent filmmaker can take a film to the festival, not have a distributor, and because it does well at the festival, it gets a distributor. And we had that happen last year to our two big films, which gives us, I think, a lot of credibility in the filmmaking community.
Right. You get an award at a prestigious film festival. That carries a lot of weight, and people take notice of that. But it also, I think, takes a little while to build up that reputation.
Right, and that's what we're doing.
Right. Do you have fun, or are you just running around crazy?
No, I tell you, it's nothing is more exciting and rewarding than when you solicit a filmmaker in Australia. You said, hey, I heard about your film. They say, why should I submit? I convince them to submit. Then I select the film. Then I bring them down to the festival, and here we are now. It's an 8-10 month process. 8-10 months later, the film is actually playing in the theater with an audience, with the filmmaker there. It's really rewarding and exciting.
What's the ratio to submissions versus what you accept?
We had well over 200 submissions.
Wow.
And we've selected about 30 feature films and about 20 documentaries. We do narrative shorts, so we've got about 28 narrative shorts. We do student shorts, and we've got about 30 student shorts, and that's one of the goals and one of the objectives of the film festival is to bring in young filmmakers. There's not a lot of opportunity for shorts and student shorts to be shown in this country, so we're creating a little bit of a venue for shorts and student shorts, so really supporting young filmmakers as they're getting started out. We've got a great selection of features, documentaries, and short films this year. Really amazing, amazing quality.
Sounds wonderful. I hope I can make it down there. Tell everybody where they can get more information. What's your website?
Okay, and the website is WSIFF.com. That's White Sands International Film Festival.com. You can go on there. The schedule is there. We've got links to trailers for this year's films. You can sign up for the workshop. The festival dates are August 22nd to the 26th in Las Cruces at the Cineport 10. And hopefully everybody will support, you know, our film festival, support filmmaking in New Mexico and the filmmakers that are coming down here to share their work with an audience.
Ross, I hope you get a big turnout. It sounds really wonderful. I really do hope I can get down at least for one day. And again, I appreciate you being on the show today.
Oh, my pleasure. Again, hope everybody comes down to, and I'll see them at the movies.
All right. Thanks a lot. This is New Mexico Film Works on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. I'm your host, Dirk Norris, and we'll be back with Eric Wilson. We're back. I'm your host, Dirk Norris, and this is New Mexico Film Works on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. And just a reminder for folks that live and work in New Mexico, you can go to our industry directory and list yourselves. We have a new website design at nmfilm.com, and the directory is listed under the public interest link. So go there, check it out, and hopefully you'll find it's easier to navigate around that that website. So on the phone right now, I have Eric Wilson. He's the CEO of Pivot VFX. His filmography includes The Matrix, The Green Lantern, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, What Dreams May Come, and many more technologically groundbreaking Academy Award-winning films. He has developed an entire new school of computer arts and technology as a consultant to private colleges and acted in key roles in various scales of operation, including producer, VFX supervisor, lead artist, and CEO. Projects he has supervised, directed, or produced have won several awards and international acclaim. And you're down there in Albuquerque, right?
That's correct.
Welcome to the show.
And thank you, Dirk. Nice to be here.
You were most recently working for Sony ImageWorks, right?
That's correct. Yeah, I was with Sony for about 3 years while they were here in downtown Albuquerque.
And as a result of them leaving, you have now formed a new company called Pivot. Or did you have Pivot before Sony left?
No, Pivot is a brand new company. It's made up of several of us who came out of Sony and pretty much decided that we like it here in New Mexico, and we wanted to make a go of it on our own.
What does the name Pivot refer to?
Pivot refers to two things, actually. One is the sort of obvious traditional definition, which means to be able to sort of turn around and do something else, so literally to pivot. And then the other meaning has to do with it is a thing that we use in computer graphics. It is a pivot point, and we use it whenever we need to rotate or translate any geometry in the computer.
So tell us what kinds of stuff you guys do there, and who are the other folks with the office, with the company?
Sure. The core team that we have is myself and Jennifer Rojo, and she is the COO, and Aaron Estrada, who is the CTO, and so he's handling most of the technology development. And then we have Dave Tart, who has just joined us, and he is actually an animation director out of Pixar. And then we have several people. We're also we have internships. We offer paid internships, and we have other people from Sony with us as well.
And the projects, the kind of projects you get yourselves involved with?
We came out of Sony with the core competencies of lighting and compositing. That was really the team that was here in Albuquerque, was responsible for sort of the end part of the process of doing computer graphics and visual effects. And so those are really the strengths that we came out with. So we're leveraging those strengths into other areas, and obviously bringing in an animation director allows us to start offering full-on character animation as well. And so what we are primarily involved with is visual effects for feature films. But the full name of the company is actually Pivot Metamedia. And we are looking at developing our own content, which can be distributed across various media. So sort of the idea of transmedia, which is the buzzword these days.
Right.
In terms of media that actually is, you know, it might be an animated feature film, and then there might be a crossover into a mobile app, and then there might be a crossover from that into a webisode series, and so on.
And you said you were looking at developing a lot of your own content?
That's correct. Yeah, we have a pretty strong push to leverage both work for hire stuff, which is what the traditional visual effects are,
right,
and to leverage that into actually becoming a studio. So our intent is to actually bring a full, essentially a movie studio, but a movie studio for the digital age into New Mexico.
Right. And the work for hire is, are you getting local work, or is this stuff coming out of Hollywood, or where is that coming from?
Actually, that is both. Mm-hmm. So we are available to do work for local, smaller, independent films, and we are also doing work for the sort of larger Hollywood mainstream.
The concept of the transmedia, or kind of the emerging media technologies, and we've had our guy Rod Sanchez looking into, you know, helping the film office kind of expand into various areas. Is that something you are going to be looking at or doing already? And that is things like visualization of scientific data. You mentioned the apps, serious gaming, that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the, you know, we're sort of at a relatively it's a very interesting time in terms of media and digital production, because the lines are getting very blurry in terms of exactly what's what. You know, what the James Cameron just announced that a lot of the next Avatar films that he's going to be making are going to actually be done in real time. And that's one of the things that we're focusing on as well, is being able to bring essentially gaming technology into entertainment production in order to both speed up the process and end up with a higher quality product at the end. And so we're looking at various technology. We're looking at how it can be applied across multiple media, and whether that is in the field of education or science and research or entertainment, all is sort of, to us, it's all computer graphic production, and it's all bringing the highest values to that production that we possibly can.
That's great to hear. In the 3 years that you have been here, any significant changes you've seen kind of in the New Mexico industry, or is it, you know, is it kind of a fast-paced thing or slow, or what's your perception of that?
Well, it's been a little bit interesting for us, because when we were with Sony, Sony was primarily a California-based company, of course, and so everything that we did while we were here, we were somewhat sequestered in our own little world, our own little Sony world. So we didn't have a whole lot of contact with the, with, you know, what was really going on in New Mexico. And so to sort of come out and form our own new company, we have met with just a tremendous amount of support from pretty much every sector. And it has been an amazing experience to meet the quality of people that are here. The amount of talent that's here has been really pretty surprising, and somewhat unexpected, only because I didn't really know any, you know, I didn't really know what was going on. And finally having an opportunity to go out and meet with, you know, the independent filmmakers and all of the other companies that are here already doing really good work has been amazing.
That's kind of interesting. The Sony did this little movie with its employees coming to Albuquerque and kind of their impressions, and I don't know if it was to convince other people to come out or not. Were you one of those folks?
I was, and it should be noted that that movie was actually not a Sony movie.
It
was actually by, well, it was by a couple of people who, a couple of guys, Josh and Philippe, who worked as animators at Sony, and they really put that film together on their own. And of course, it was such a good representation of what it was like to move to Albuquerque that Sony, you know, it became very closely associated with Sony, since all of the people that are in the film worked for Sony. But yeah, that that was not actually a Sony-sponsored film. Mm. That was actually a really kind of honest appraisal on the part of people who had moved here about what it was like to move to Albuquerque.
So absolutely no propaganda there at all, huh?
Right, exactly.
Have you been in touch with the universities? I'm just curious if you know any of the programs that are being conducted and kind of what at what level they're at.
Absolutely. We actually have been involved on our own. Aaron Estrada, who is the CTO, and myself have both been involved with UNM for a couple of years now. We've been involved with the IFDM program there, and we're both actually continuing to teach and mentor and stay involved with that program, and I work with SUVA as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the wonderful thing about the timing of what it is that we're doing is that, you know, when we first came here and we started teaching classes at UNM and working with the students, the first crop of students are just graduating that we've been working with. And so we've got a tremendous group of kids coming out of UNM that are really skilled and talented and that have an idea of what it is that we do. And we're able to bring them in and actually, give them paid internships and actually start building a community, which is the real intent of what it is that we're doing with the schools and universities here, is to build a community of people that know what we do, are capable of doing it, and actually grow, you know, the digital filmmaking community in Albuquerque.
And we just have about 45 seconds left, but is that what it's going to take for industries to know that the workforce is here and then bring the work?
I think it's a combination of that and being able to advertise ourselves as already having a talent base here. The talent that we have at Pivot is really some of the top-tier talent in the world. And so being able to combine that with, the students coming out of colleges and universities is really the key.
It's kind of tough. There may be kind of a lapse period where you have the crew, they're ready to go, but you still have to get the work in.
Exactly.
Eric, I really appreciate you being on the show. Where can people get more information? Your website?
Absolutely. It's www.pivotvfx.com. And we also have a Facebook page. Feel free to check that out and like us.
Thanks so much for being on the show.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
All righty. This is New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. And we'll be right back with John Armijo in just a minute. Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. This program is broadcast at 11 o'clock a.m. Saturday, and you can listen to the podcast at santafe.com. Click on the KTRC podcast link and look for the New Mexico Filmworks radio show. Right now we have John Armijo on the phone, and he's talking about films made in the 1950s. Hi, John.
Howdy, Dirk. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, today we'll visit films of the 50s. There were 34 films made in the decade, and half of them were Westerns. But before I begin, here's a little background on the history of the Western. The Great Train Robbery was produced by the Edison Company in 1903, and it was directed by Edwin Porter, who shot the film on location. And by doing so, he changed the way filmmakers would tell stories and how they would produce films. No longer confined to the limitations of interior sets, Porter filled the screen with organic landscapes, excuse me, new camera angles, new perspectives, and lots of action that held audiences breathless. The film had 14 scenes and was a blistering 10 minutes long. Two scenes in the film actually made audiences duck in their seats. The first was a locomotive heading straight into the front row, and the other was at the conclusion of the film when actor Justice Barnes pointed his gun at the audience and fired a shot. His co-star, Gilbert M. Anderson, would soon become Bronco Billy, the first cowboy star of the silver screen. In 1998, 27 years after his death, Anderson was honored with his image on a United States postage stamp. So there you go, Dirk. Even back then, the post office was a bit slow. The next cowboy stars to emerge from the silent era would be William S. Hart, a Shakespearean actor, and Tom Mix, the All-American Cowboy. Mm-hmm. Monogram Pictures, known for their low-budget films, was responsible for introducing us to scores of soon-to-be cowboy movie stars like Bob Steele, Randolph Scott, and John Wayne, as well as stars of every other genre. They brought us stuff like The Cisco Kid, The Bowery Boys, Charlie Chan, Bamba the Jungle Boy, and Invasion of the Body Snatchers. In 1950, Allied Artist Pictures, a division of Monogram, shot the B-Western Short Grass somewhere in Albuquerque, possibly in the North Valley. Included in the cast with Rod Cameron and Kathy Downs was Monogram actor Johnny Mac Brown, another cowboy movie star legend and the king of the B-Westerns. Lippert Pictures first opened their doors in 1929 as a film distributor, then switched to a production company in 1948. The last film they produced in 1994 had the ironic title, Don't Do It. Between 1948 and 1953, Lippert had cranked out 40 films, many of them westerns. In 1953, they made The Tall Texan, directed by Elmo Williams and starring Lloyd Bridges, Lee J. Cobb, and Marie Windsor. Filming took place in Columbus, Deming, and at the City of Rock State Park. And how about this? The studio held the premiere in Deming. Two Flags West, produced by 20th Century Fox in 1950, had an all-star cast that included Joseph Cotten, Linda Darnell, Cornell Wilde, Dale Robertson, and Jeff Chandler. Also in the film was Albuquerque resident Alan Church, who played a cavalry soldier and had a small speaking part. For 6 weeks, he rode his horse around the Shipment Ranch, which is near Black Mesa, and at San Ildefonso Pueblo, which stood in as Fort Thorn. Try saying that fast 20 times. Church ran the timing operation for various ski events at the 2002 Winter Games in Salt Lake City. But an even bigger deal was when the United States Ski and Snowboarding Association chose him to recite the official's oath at the Olympic opening ceremonies. Peggy Pound Church, Alan's mother, was a prominent New Mexico author and poet. Another native New Mexican, George LeBeau, made his debut in Two Flags West. George was a wrangler and an extra in the film. My Friend Irma Goes West starred Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, and Marie Wilson. This was a sequel to My Friend Irma, a very popular radio show in 1947. It starred Marie Windsor in the title role. But when Paramount adapted the radio show into a movie, they brought in Martin and Lewis, who literally stole the show. This was their debut in motion pictures. So by the time they made the sequel in 1950, Marie had second billing. Filming was done in Albuquerque at the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad Station and at the Alvarado Hotel and Harvey House. Martin Lewis also made Hollywood or Bust in New Mexico in 1956, and that would be the last film they'd make together before the breakup. Another Paramount comedy made in 1949, but released in 1950, was Fancy Pants, starring Bob Hope and Lucille Ball. Scenes were shot in Lamy and here in Santa Fe. Filming was held up for several days when Hope fell off a wooden horse, spraining his back in the process. Polly Burson, one of the greatest stunt women of all time, doubled for Lucille Ball. Dirk, according to Wikipedia, The Bowery Boys was the longest-running feature film series in movie history with 48 titles. And you know, they all had nicknames. What was Terrence Aloysius Mahoney's nickname? Slip.
Slip?
How about Horace Dabuzy Jones?
Got
Satch.
Satch?
Okay, here's an easy one. Louis Xavier Dombrowski. Louis.
Louis. Oh, he, okay, well.
He was the owner of the soda shop.
Ah, okay.
There you go.
Hey, I'm not familiar with the Tom Mix movies. Did he have a sidekick?
He did not. He had a horse, though, called, what was his name?
Oh, you said that, too.
Tony.
Tony. Okay.
But no sidekick.
You know, Gino has, here in the studio, he's got a nice pair of chaps hanging from his...
Oh, really?
Here. Yeah. All right, John, thanks so much.
Okay, Dirk. See you next week.
All righty. Just wanted to mention a few of the films being made in New Mexico right now, independent films by our own New Mexicans, and the next couple of weeks in the radio show, I'll be talking to these guys. The Rugged Guy, Jason Aesnap, Hannah McPherson, Those Who Wait, Scott Milder, Dead Billy, Daniel Glick, A Place to Stand, Corey Weintraub, Matanza, Peter Tuch, they're working hard down in Las Cruces on Odd Way Home. And that's just a couple of them that are going to be talking to those folks. Also have a bit of news for everybody. The Filmmakers Showcase still lives. We are going to be having the showing of movies October 12th through October 14th at the Guild Theater in Albuquerque. So stay tuned for more information. Look for the press release coming out. And how you can enter into the New Mexico Film Office Filmmaker Showcase. Real excited about that. You've been listening to New Mexico Film Works on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio, and we'll be back next week.